Cheers. That would suffice. And Herman, are there brochures to pass out to those that... Well, are there brochures to pass out to those that like it? Okay, let's get started. Sorry for the delay. We, as the ASO and the NRO, has had a is still having a meeting actually with the GAC, updating them on the current situation with the RPKI deployment. So several of us have come over to have this session start. And if the tables can wait until a little later, that would be excellent. All right, my name's Louis Lee. I'm the chair of the ASO Address Council. And I'll just go jump right in. We're gonna go over what the Address Council is, what the ASO is, give you an update on the outreach and educational activities, touch on the ASO review report, the global policy update, the regional policy update, and the Internet Number Resource Status Report. There will be time for discussion afterwards, and I would ask for questions throughout the presentation at the end of each section. That way we can stay relevant on topic. Now, are there any remote participants that would like me to go into about the ASO in depth? How about in the room? Everyone knows who I am, who we are? All right then, we'll just breeze right through this then. The ASO is a function supported by, run by the NRO. Two bodies, the AC and the EC. The AC primary purpose is for number resource policy making. Well, not policy making, policy facilitating. We also have the function of putting up two ICANN board members and serving on various ICANN teams. The Executive Council are made up of the CEOs of the five RIRs. What is the NRO? The NRO is the organization that does the work of the ASO, does also facilitate other items which require coordination. For instance, protecting the whole of the unallocated number resource pool. And as described, here are the five regions on the slides. These regions you might see have similar overlap with the ALAC regions or the CCNSO regions, but they are not identical. ASO funding to ICANN. The ASO does provide some amount of monies annually to ICANN. Comes out to about $823,000 annually, with the percentages, the breakdown as shown. The Address Council is composed of 15 members, three from each region. We are an independent body separate from the IRRs in that we are elected from the residents of the regions. As shown, here are the 15 members. We have, I believe, about seven members represented in the ICANN week here, several of which you see up, two of them up here, and also a couple down in the audience. And we'll get to know them in a little bit. Any questions about the ASO? I blew through it pretty quickly, but if anybody wants to ask, now's a good time. Excellent. Okay, outreach efforts. The this community, the IP community and the RIRs jointly do regional policy meetings and sub-region meetings. If you can't come to one of the remote meetings, one of the physical meetings, you can participate remotely. Or if you would like for the meeting to come to you, there are some sub-regional meetings regularly put on, such as the one in Russia in the Middle East. IETF participation is fairly heavy, and it does vary a little bit from time to time depending on the topic being discussed, but there's considerable work happening on the technical side for developing protocols. And for instance, the RPKI has a joint cooperation with the IETF. NANOG being the North American version. There's a MENOG for Middle East. NOGs all around the world happening at various sizes to address the operational issues and operational training that occurs that needs to occur for the smooth operation of the net. And beyond that, just operation, there's also security focus. And building outreach for the folks all around the world. IGF and other government, internet governance forums with V6 forums, trade shows, and civil society, just to make sure that we reach not just those that are interested in numbers, but interested in, say, IT work. So I touched on training a little bit with the outreach. There you can do face-to-face training. You can come to us, or if you request, we can come to you. E-learning opportunities are online. You can just go to a website and find on there fairly easily, I hope for you, webinars and learning modules. If you cannot, please do get a hold of us, and we'll direct you appropriately and see if there's a ways we can improve that. Of course, collaborations with the NOGs and training organizations and universities. In several of the RIR meetings, the meeting is well integrated into the network operator group meeting week. Then in the area of public affairs, we host roundtables, workshops, and presentations where we would be at the ITUs, WSET, working with the OECD groups, and so on. Fairly new in this effort is the SEED Alliance. It is a new umbrella alliance to promote innovation and social development, funded by the IDRC, along with AFRNIC, APNIC, and LACNIC. The RIR partners, have the projects listed as Frida from LACNIC especially, and AFRNIC, a fairly new fire, I believe it's on there. Of course, this SEED Alliance was launched in March 31st of this year. And in the area of internet governance, the next meeting that we want to highlight is the Baku meeting in November. The MAG members being Paul Wilson and Paul Rendek. They are from the APNIC region and the RIPE region. With NRO workshops that are open to all, specifically the Internet Governance and RPKI, and the Moving to IPv6 workshop. Any questions about what I've just gone over? Great. May I pause for just a check for a remote? Thank you, Olaf. Okay, independent review of the ICANN ASO. We had slated for John Curran to provide this update. However, he is still engaged with the GAC at the moment. So I can do this for you. There was a request for a proposal some time ago, and Items International had completed the review at the end of last year. The review was posted in, I believe, the March timeframe, and we received one comment. The review consisted of 26 recommendations, with an additional recommendation we saw from the comments, and the NRO provided a joint NRO and ASOAC reply to all 27 recommendations. They are in the, if I may characterize, they are in a positive manner and do address the recommendations either directly or seek other ways to address the concerns that the recommendations are seeking to solve. And I jumped ahead on the slide. Okay. Questions about the review? Please. And the floor mic. Thank you.
Is that working? Yeah. Alain Bideron, I would like to know what is the next step in the review.
Ah. So the next step that I've glossed over is that it's in the slide here that I did not show. The report is being reviewed also with comments and the response. They're being reviewed by the ICANN Structural Review Committee. Insofar that there are some recommendations that point to the ICANN board and how they might interact with the ASO. Thank you. Any other questions about the review? Great. So, global policy update. Overview of the process is that the regional communities would typically propose a policy which we would look at and see if it could be a candidate for a global policy. The global policy as defined by the MOU between ICANN and the RIRs, more specifically, is a policy that requires actions not only by the RIRs themselves, but actions out by other ICANN bodies such as the IANA. So the ASOAC have a look at these policies, and as they work through the policy development process as defined by within each region, will come to consensus if they do. And if they do come to consensus on this, we'll pass on to NRO and up to the ASOAC to review. And if we find that the policy proposal has gone through the process following the process well and also has addressed all the significant concerns, then we'll pass it on to the ICANN board for comment and ratification. The ICANN board can also suggest policy or suggest perhaps more like a problem statement for the ASOAC to look at and perhaps suggest a policy be made to address that situation. So the current policies have to do with the criteria for establishing new RIRs, allocation of ASN blocks from IANA, allocations of V6 and V4 address blocks from the IANA to the RIRs. So pre-exhaustion and at-exhaustion, those had existed previous to the most latest policy that has been ratified, being GPP IPv4 2011. This is the global policy proposal for post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation mechanisms by the IANA. So it guides how IANA would receive the address space that may come to them in any form, whether the RIRs return them or they are returned by the IP holder directly, perhaps a legacy holder, and it was ratified by the ICANN board last month. Since then, there have been already resources returned by two of the RIRs. The RIPE staff has given some amount, and the ARIN also has done so. The specific address blocks are documented on their websites. Any questions about that? And we have a question from Elise from the floor.
Actually, it's not a question. Elise Garrick, ICANN.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to mention about the post-IPv4 exhaustion policy that was adopted and the addresses that were returned to the IANA. And we had a meeting this week with the RIRs to talk about how to register those and what the registration policy will be. I mean, we're holding them, but to make them publicly accessible and people know what state they're in, we've been talking with them and have some proposals with the RIRs that we're discussing of how that publication will show up on the IANA website.
Thank you. Excellent. Anyone else? Great. Okay, regional policy update. So we have a summary here showing that there are 37 proposals being worked on around the world. And the breakdown is shown here with 11 about IPv4 policies, 7 on the IPv6 policies, 10 on transfer policies, 6 on WHOIS and registration change, and other reverse DNS and ASN policies. There are 3 of those. So as you can see, while there is a substantial number of policies, rather technical, there are also internet governance matters to attend to, such as specifically the transfer policies and the WHOIS. So if you think you cannot participate just because you're not, quote-unquote, a techie, there's plenty to work on. And if I may ask Nirish Ajwani from AP region.
Thank you. The under-discussion policies we have got for IPv6, which is a proposal 101, and this took place in the last session also, and out there we wanted to make some changes, which now have been done, and we will be taking it up in a forthcoming APNIC meet. This will be about, you know, multi-homing requirements for IPv6 portable assignment. There is a need to remove them. And then we have for IPv6 again, a proposal 99, which is to have a reservation for large networks because some economies wanted to have a contiguous and a large allocation, and that's what we will be discussing in forthcoming APNIC. In terms of a pending implementation, there is a proposal 102, which is about guidelines for resource allocation for IPv6. And recently we abandoned the 98 because there was some kind of a duplication, rather there was some conflict out in that proposition also, which was optimizing IPv6 allocation strategies, and we want to simplify it. So that's what is currently in terms of policies being undertaken at APNIC. Thank you.
For AFRINIC, they have a policy that's been recently implemented. It has to do with the abuse contact information and ways of recording abuse contact in the WHOIS database. But beyond that, under discussion are a couple of policies. There's one specifically about IPv4 with anycast assignment in the service region. And recently expired, meaning ones that have either been abandoned or no further work, just left stale, they have a timeout on 2 of the IPv4 policies and 1 WHOIS. The IPv4 ones have to do with reclamation of allocated but unrouted V4 space and the transfer of IPv4 addresses to just anyone. And within Aaron, recently adopted are three transfer policies that have to do with, say, inter-IIR transfers, clarifying requirements for V4 transfers, and ASN transfers. And under discussions are more transfer policies with 1v6 and a couple of other ones that are v4 and HUIS. As you can see, there's plenty of work to be done, and the next Aaron meeting will be in October if you'd like to come join us. But before that, join our mailing list and have your thoughts. I'll leave that up there for a moment to for you to scan through. You don't want me reading the slides to you. All right. And then in last call are a couple of IPv4 and WHOIS related policies. The V4 policies have to do with limiting the use of the term dial-up, basically deprecating that, and the special IPv4 allocations assignments reserved for new members. Now, of the WHOIS ones that are in last call are the ROA data in the WHOIS database and when it's available, and registering assignments. I'm sorry. I just jumped into LACNIC here. I thought I was under Aaron still here. So we do not have a LACNIC representative in the room. That's okay. Continuing on, recently implemented. For three V4 policies have to do with the distribution of V4 space with just a modification of how that works there, with a slight change on line 6 also of the policy manual for the under V4 exhaustion. Now, under discussion still are three transfer policies. If you're interested in transfers, I'm sorry, I just jumped to the
ripe.
No, you're
in the ripe region, Louis, so no, I thought I'd step in. And
if you would like, please.
Thank you.
And this is Hans Petter.
Yeah, and for some reason, we're now starting with the ones under discussion. To update the database with proper abuse contact management, as required not only by law enforcement agencies and governments, but to make that information more structured to make sure we can run the internet properly is one of the proposals. Then there are three proposals here on RIR, or on transfers of IP addresses within the... You want me to speak even louder? Okay. Within the region and between the region. And the last one is also interesting because it actually proposes to require the RIPE NCC to publish all the transfers, so that should be transparent to the community. PI assignments from the last /8, it was noted that the policy for the restrictive policy for assigning from the last address block was only allowing assignments to ISPs and not to end user companies who wanted to be provider independent. So this proposal is to change that. So next slide, please. On recently implemented policies, there is one on removing the multi-home requirement for IPv6 provider independent. There was a technical requirement in there to make sure that the RIPE NCC would actually check that you were multi-home, but as that's not possible to do in a good way in the internet, that requirement has been removed. And then the second one here is changing the minimum requirement size for IPv6 initial allocation, so you can actually get more address space in the first round, so you can plan to grow faster, to paraphrase it. And the last one is to make sure that we still have some IP addresses for V4 internet exchange points in the future so the internet can continue to grow. Thank you.
And if I may advertise a little bit, participation is easy, being that the policy mailing lists have no membership requirements. And by membership, meaning you do not have to be a member of the RIRs, you do not have to be a resident of the region that you want to discuss policy or even propose policies for. You may attend the RIR meetings either in person or from remote participation. Now, the upcoming meetings are listed. The next few are the APNIC, RIPE, and ARIN region meetings, followed by LATNIC and AFRINIC. You might note that the ARIN meeting is the week right after the ICANN meeting in Toronto. So if you're in North America anyway for that, pop in. At this point, I'd like to make sure I introduce all the ASOAC members from the various regions. If you have any questions about the policies within each region themselves, please reach out to us, and you don't even have to find the specific person from the region. We'll make sure we get you in contact with the right folks if you want to go more in depth. So up on the table here, we have Naresh Ajwani from the APNIC area region. Hans-Peter Holen, Wilfred Wilbur, right up here, Tomohiro Fujisaki, and Fiona Asanga, right over there, hailing from the AFRINIC region. I'm sorry, I did not mention your regions, Wilfred, from the RIPE region, and Tomohiro is from the APNIC region. Do we have any other ASOAC members? Okay. Other related folks, we have Dan Alexander in the back from the ARIN Advisory Council, who the council helps oversee the policy development process and gauge consensus within the ARIN region. We also have various folks from the RIR staff. And if you can make sure you identify yourselves, there's Herman walking around. I believe he has some brochures if you'd like some more information in detail about how to participate. Internet number resource status report. This was prepared by the staff of the RIRs, and this is most of the information is as of March 31st. This is done quarterly. I am presenting some of the information that can be found elsewhere, but hopefully this summary will help you work through the larger reports. So the status of the V4 address space. IPv4 can be said to be blocks that can be broken up into chunks of /8s, which is, and there are 256 /8s in the whole of the IPv4 address space. So this chart describes how those chunks are distributed amongst uses and amongst the regions. So as you can see, they are pretty much allocated. And of course, what's left? So are the chunks of /8s as of March 31st. There are about 4/8s in the AFRINIC regions to be allocated out. In APNIC, effectively, there's less than 1. So they are right now in austerity measures where the blocks they will be assigning out to requesters are rather small, but just enough to get them through their initial hump while they are hopefully deploying their V6. In the ARIN region, there is a little less than 5 chunks as of March. I'm not sure, and we'll go into a slide with the current status a little later in the presentation here, just a few pages on. In LATNIC, there's a little less than 4/8s, and in RIPE, about 2.5. IPv4 address space issued by the various the staffs of the different RIRs. You can just see the trend of the graph. I think that's more important than the actual detail of each bar. So you can see that up until 2010, there's been a trend of more and more space issued in the APNIC region. With it dropping off and this was only 2 years ago. So we can show here where the address space is distributed more finely here, how it's issued out with APNIC having about 45% and RIPE NCC having about 33%. You might see that AFRINIC has a very small amount of space issued in this time, January 1999 to March 2012, being that the amount of addresses issued is directly proportional to the amount of requests that have come in. So the requests for address space and the size would aggregate to the amounts shown here. So you may see that growth in some of the other regions are not as large as RIPE and APNIC. That could be one conclusion. You might look at data and draw other conclusions. Please, perfectly willing to discuss. ASN assignments. ASNs are autonomous system numbers that describe help networks describe and identify themselves as a single network, and they use ASNs to talk to other ASNs and exchange routes, meaning this is, if you want to get to this address, come to me. I'm this ASN, routed this way. So the graph would roughly show how many networks are out there and the number of networks are growing. And a follow-up pie chart about number of assignments that have been made. You might see that Aaron has fairly matched up with the RIPE region. Describes that Aaron's growth, the assignments will show that they have the roughly same number of networks as the RIPE region. Four-byte ASN assignments. Now, the earlier scheme for AS numbers are set up as 2-byte. It's a certain address size. 4 bytes extend that to allow you to have two orders of magnitude larger amounts of address space, 2 bytes more, which is not actually twice as much more. It's, somebody help me here, 8 times? Much, much more. Way more than 8. Right. I'm trying to do this in my head right now. So anyway, it allows you to have that many more networks to be in existence at the same time on the internet. Tracking this is important because there are many networks out there still using equipment that do not support the 4-byte scheme. The new scheme has come with a new way of talking with each other that is backwards compatible to some extent. The regions that have been using the most 4-byte ASNs are in RIPE and in APNIC, with LATNIC coming up really close, and Aaron and AFRINIC falling behind there. It has to do with the existing networks, perhaps asking for more ASNs that may have legacy equipment, and the provider claiming that they cannot support the 4-byte AS numbers. That's one of the reasons given for not having a large adoption in the Aaron region. More interestingly, IPv6. Elise, did you want to address the conclusion that I drew?
No, I'm not going to challenge. This is Elise Garrick again. But on 4-byte ASNs, I mean, we keep saying they're new, but how many years have they been out there?
True.
I mean, Can you quantify for the group? Because they're not new. I mean, they've been developed in vendors' equipment for quite a number of years.
The oldest since I
Yes. Somebody has that number by chance? About when 4-byte was... There's people looking for that right now.
Well, if you look at the slide, it says 2007.
Oh, yeah, 2007.
So, you know, 5 years is... It's not
no,
old,
it's
old,
not
old. It's not like Prague. But it's definitely not new.
So Elise brings up a very good point in that... there may be large perception issues about the ability to use 4-byte ASMs. And the excuses out there may not hold up anymore, being that the 4-byte's available. With that, I'm getting nods from Elise, thank you. So, we can go on and have a discussion right after this section. Olaf.
Just to confirm, the global policy for ASN, which sort of confirmed the existence and the coexistence of 2-byte and 4-byte ASN, was adopted in the fall of 2007. So, yeah, well, it's got a few years of life already.
4-byte is 4-byte ASN is no secret, shall we say. All right, IPv6 address space. Some may think that's new. We have stats going back to October 2006. There's been considerable work since before then. So this set of pie charts can help you understand what amount of space we are talking about that is being allocated to the RIRs in context with how much space there is in the IPv6 block. So you can see a small chunk has been assigned out, has been designated for IANA to give out to the RIRs. And a sliver of that were given out equally to all 5 RIRs, equal in size. There is no judgment made about growth, no judgment made about region size. So if there's considerations on why a certain region got small amount of space, well, that's because the other regions got the same amount of space. And if you look at it, /12 is actually fairly large. Now, actual allocations, maybe we'll move on to the pie chart, actually. Right after we have a look at this, you see some growth in allocations given by the RIRs with the ripe region handing out the most. And in all, you can see that the ripe NCC, the ripe staff, has given out roughly half of the allocations in use so far. Now, given that the allocations can be assigned to the ISPs, we also look at the assignments given out to the end users. You don't have to be an ISP to, or an NIR or an LIR to receive addresses. This interesting graph shows the percentage of members with both IPv4 and IPv6 in that large, well, okay, maybe less than half, but a substantial portion of the members are able to make use of their IPv6 addresses that they have in their possession. An update, as of June 25th, the available number of IPv4/8 blocks is shown here, with AFRINIC having a little more than 4/8 equivalent. And by equivalent, I mean /8s or aggregates of addresses adding up to a /8, with APNIC having still less than a single /8, and ARIN now having come down to 3.2 from the previous number, and LACNIC at about 3.4, and RIPE just under 2/8s. And just the actual numbers from the graph. These statistics are available online too. You may see them on a quarterly basis, and you can draw also the raw data from the INO website. Questions, comments about the statistics? Okay, Olaf, I believe we have a comment from remote.
Yes, this is Olaf Nording reading out questions from the remote participants. And we do have a question from Faisal Hassan from ISOC Bangladesh. And it runs like this. Deployment of IPv6 is rather slow in developing countries. There is a huge demand for training, although RIRs have training programs, but those are insufficient in compared to demand. Thus, RIRs have plan or partnership with universities to scale the training program. End of question.
Beautiful question. We don't have.
Raul, I believe you'd like to address that.
Okay. I'm Raul Echeverria. I'm the CEO of LACNIC, and I can answer this question from LACNIC point of view. I agree with the part of the assertion that says that the capacity building is important and for IPv6 adoption. I slightly disagree with the fact that the training that we are providing is not enough. In fact, in Latin America, we have trained more than 5,000 people. And when the analysis that we make in the region is that the capacities exist. This is not the problem for... This is not the main obstacle now for the adoption of IPv6. And in fact, probably is the strength that we have is that we know that we have the people trained in order to deploy IPv6, and it depends not in the availability of the human resources, but in corporate decisions and other things. But of course, we continue doing the training, and we are scaling the training. What we are doing now is trying to train trainers, make materials available on sites, and so we provide many trainers through the online. So we are just trying to multiply the options of our chances for training people. Thank you.
At APNIC, we are also doing a capacity building, and rather in emerging economies, we are taking it very seriously. Recently we did in Calcutta, India, and similarly, these kind of programs are there in majority of the emerging economies in APNIC. However, definitely there is an issue of a demand and supply and the adoption. I think that is something which needs to be addressed so that things can really go down below the at the bottom of the pyramid of where the training can be imparted and all. Thanks.
Might I suggest that the question of asking for training is really just a matter of reaching out and asking for it. I know AFNOG is going on around the African region, as along with the AFRINIC meetings, and there are efforts to follow up on that. I think we have a comment from the floor. Go ahead, if you would like to take a mic, please. That would help our remote participants to hear your question.
Thank you. My name is Victor Ndona. I'm from Cameroon, ISOC Cameroon chapter. So as far as we have a translation here, I will continue my comment in French. So can you please take your headset?
Is there a French translation happening? Yes, there is. Thank you very much.
I was saying, my name is Victor Denange. I am from the chapter of Cameroon. Thank you for your presentation and your updates on the last activity on the addressing. I would like to start with... I want to go straight to the question that was asked by a colleague from ISOP Bangladesh. When it comes to the Cameroon chapter of the Internet Society, we are working on a project which is called Impact IPv6 with the financial support of the Internet Society and the support of AFRINIC. And this initiative... I have to acknowledge, started since AFRINIC has organized for the first time a meeting in Central Africa, especially in Cameroon, specifically in Cameroon. This really boosted the deployment of the IPv6, and actually, to this date, there are two registrants and two ISPs and service providers, internet service provider, which are having concrete activities of deployment of the IPv6. So I would like to say here, thank you to AFRINIC for all the efforts that they are giving us, that they are doing to support the deployment of the IPv6 when it comes to the region, the African region, sorry. And I would like to say as well that the deployment efforts cannot only be limited to training. There is a lot to do when it comes to sensibilization. Because if I take the case of the Cameroon, after the AFRINIC meeting, there was a presidential decree that allowed the National Agency for Communication to be in charge of the distribution of the IP address at a national level, but we know that the agency is not a member of AFRINIC. But my question is, how is it going to be practically set up? How because right now there are internet service provider, which are members of AFRINIC that have addresses blocks. But at a political level, that it will be just one agency which will be in charge of all the distribution of the IP addresses at a national level. They're at a level of DUT, or that the IT would be in charge of the address deployment of IPv6 addresses. My feeling is that if something is not done at the level of AFRINIC and some states continue in a unilateral way to give the distribution of the addresses to national entities, it will be limiting the managing of the IP addresses.
We have John Curran from the floor. I believe he'd like to address that the questions.
Yes, this is John Curran. I'm the president and CEO of ARIN and the chairman of the NRO, which serves as the address supporting organization. With respect to your question regarding the allocation of addresses by national entities, I do not see a deal from AFRINIC here who would be the best one to address that. But it really is a question that needs to be worked in each region regarding whether or not they'll use ISP-based allocation, which is most typical, or whether a more national organized allocation will be put in place. Obviously, some governments have beliefs regarding the merits of a national-based allocation system. That does have interesting implications for internet routing and for service providers who have to operate in the region. But ultimately, it's a matter that has to be discussed in those regional forums. There is no overall policy that says allocations must be allocated from a regional registry. We do have several RIRs that have national-level registries as part of their operation. But that's a significant implication that needs to be discussed and supported by the service providers in that community. So I recommend you bring that to Adiel for AFRINIC and that discussion be held to make sure that the service providers want that as their outcome. Okay? Thank you.
And on to follow on is Hans Petter.
Hans-Petter Holen, I'm going to answer this from my experience in building ISPs in the Nordics many years ago. Back then, when we built the first ISPs, we were always doing this nationally, and we were competing with the incumbent in each country. This was in the beginning of the 90s. Today, all the ISPs that I was part of building or have purchased services from are no longer national ISPs. They have merged across borders. So all the big players in the five countries in the Nordics today are operating in Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Denmark. And they have all merged their address plans to be cross-border, so the need for national addressing is no longer there. It would actually be a problem for these players today if they had to use specific addresses in specific countries. So I think that while national registration of addresses may seem a good idea, then at least my experience in the Nordics is that it's not a request for that today. It's more a request to have sufficient resources available. Thank you.
Thank you. And while this forum is not exactly, this forum here today is not exactly a policy discussion forum, and we can try to take some sentiments back over to as input into the policy discussions, I would urge you to engage directly so that we do not misrepresent what you have to say. And that way, you can also hear the feedback directly from other participants, rather than trying to get a sense from what we might gather from those other meetings. Other folks? Okay. Are there any questions for not just the last section, but overall? By the way, one of the recommendations from the ASO review has to do with morphing or evolving this workshop into something that may be more engaging or more useful for the audience, for you, and also for anybody that might want to come but don't know if they want to come. What is it? What did you like? What did you not like? You can tell me now. Tell me later. Fill out the surveys. So please, we love your feedback on this. All right, then. If there isn't anything else, we'll close the session. Thank you very much.